Our sermon this morning was to be delivered by Catherine Boyle. I am not Catherine, but she did send me her sermon, which I will share with you now. The sun pressed down hard upon the woman, the humidity amplifying the sweat on her brow as she pushed. She felt the inside of her kick and let out a moan as she gripped onto the branch of a tree in the garden. The garden was a quiet place usually, but now it was filled with the pains of childbirth, and the woman let out one last scream, and there in the green leaves, her son was born. She held the crying babe in her arms, marveling at the beauty before her, this creation that had just caused her so much pain was now so lovely, so precious. She gave him the name that meant one who achieves his aim. 7 days later, the queen died. Despite his mother's early death, the son was raised in a golden world. His aunt made sure he was well-loved, well-protected, and of course, well-fed. This boy lived his life in three palaces, shielded from the world of squalor and suffering of the kingdom, wanting not and needing not. This paradise was ensured by his family, who loved him so. They also remembered the dream his mother had before his birth, one the sages believed meant he would either become a great king or a great spiritual leader. They could have none of that. One day, this child was watching the dancers as they moved their arms gracefully and saw between their rainbow veils an open door. There he saw the road out to the glimmering city. Each time he saw that open door, his curiosity increased. What was out there? What lay beyond these ornate walls? And by the time he was a young man, married now with a wife and a young son of his own, he could not resist but open Pandora's box. He left the palace. On the streets that day, he saw an old person, the first one he had ever seen. The wrinkles, the gray hair, the slow movements. Who was this human? What had happened to them to make them so? He continued on the streets, sidestepping vendors and their stalls, and the air was heavy, not with the scent of perfume, but with rotting food and garbage. The place beyond his palace was miasmic. He could not fathom all the chaos of everyday existence. Should he go back to the palace? No, he was far too curious. He must see what lay ahead. Then he heard a cough and saw a man, a leper, on the side of the building, both of his legs missing and his hand extended out, begging and crying for a coin. A sick person. He turned to push away and then saw a group of people carrying something heavy and wrapped in white cloth. As they passed him, the cloth slipped and he saw the face of a corpse. His body yelled at him to run, but his heart had a realization. This was life, real life, and the truth was shown so clearly to him then and there. This is my fate too. I will also become old. I will also become ill. I will also die. How do I deal with these things? The story of Siddhartha leaving the palace for the first time is crucial to the story of him becoming the Buddha. What led him out there in the first place? Curiosity. You know, curiosity gets a bad rap. Curiosity killed the cat. Ah, but at least he died nobly, says Albert Einstein. Augustine, on the other hand, says the cat had it coming. That curiosity is a disease, a vice that leads us to temptation and danger, one that distracts us from the true purpose of life. After all, wasn't it the quest for knowledge that made Eve bite that apple? In my experience, Unitarian Universalists tend to be pro-Eve on the matter of the apple. Tree of knowledge? Yes! Can I get one of those at my house? In our lineage, seeking out knowledge is crucial to faith development. Our spiritual foreparents tended on the Unitarian branch of the family to live in houses with more books in them than bricks and valued the art of debate. That trait lives on. Ask a UU for a book recommendation and you'll get a list. Ask for an opinion and you darn well will hear it. So why am I up here then preaching to the choir on curiosity? We are a curious bunch and don't need a push in that direction. I have to say, I am more Augustine on this subject. What I mean is, not that curiosity will kill us, but untethered curiosity is distracting to the purpose of our life. But focused curiosity is necessary and can be a spiritual practice unto itself. Faith of the free. We live in wide open circles in UU, unafraid to grab theology from here and there, making us true mutts of the religious world. But with these wide fields, this intellectual readiness to devour and devote ourselves to all good and true is a hurdle to finding the truth. Imagine the world of religion as a grand map, taking up this entire room. Over here, three great Abrahamic faiths shared this corner. Then Buddhism, Hinduism, the other Eastern faiths over there. Paganism here, humanism there, philosophy. Our theological landscape needs more than a guide map. It needs an encyclopedia. In these broad sweeps, we are a curious bunch. This trait ingrained into our spiritual DNA to learn for the sake of learning. Yet in our quest for knowledge, how many of the apples do we actually eat? Curiosity can be a fickle, fickle, fleeting trait, dashing from one topic to another. Scientists have found a curiosity gene in songbirds. The gene is responsible for creating receptors for the neurotransmitter dopamine. Birds with this gene showed a likeliness to visit new areas and explore unfamiliar objects in their cages. We may not be songbirds, but it makes you wonder. How much of spirituality do we allow to become a part of ourselves, not solely as intellectual knowledge and the thrill of feeling the dopamine, but as the blood, not only of our spiritual lives, but our entire lives. This is a hard task. Curiosity, deep curiosity, requires deep living, requires sacrifice. In the story of leaving the palace, in his quest for knowledge, Siddhartha left behind his wife and family. Not an easy thing. Now, please don't go to your partner after service today and say it's been a good run, but gotta go. See ya. But understanding that curiosity as a spiritual practice means potentially letting go of ideas, beliefs, and practices that may be entirely ingrained in our psyche, but must be let go. We have to exit the comforts of our internal palaces to truly live a deeply curious life and reap the blessing of that. This conjures up a lot of fear. After all, these beliefs and ideas have nestled themselves comfortably in our minds, and we feel cozy with them there. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? But if knowledge seeking is the true precept of our faith, which it is as the fourth principle, a free and responsible search for meaning, we must be willing to let go of what no longer serves us, what no longer enables us to serve the world. More so, it is what makes us vulnerable and feel scared. We must get to the core of existence with our fierce questionings. Like Siddhartha said, we will become old too. We will become ill too. We will die. How do we deal with these things? Oftentimes, we want to shut Pandora's box again on these questions. It is easy to coast through life with a shallow curiosity. We read about historical events. We get obsessed with learning how to make the perfect lasagna. We count down the days until the next Star Wars movie. It is so easy in this world to go on autopilot, one day after the next, until you wake up and find your life is setting. Deep curiosity requires us to engage, to be mindful, to live a life not distracted by temptation or danger, but infused with purpose. Deep curiosity as a spiritual practice is attaining deep knowledge of ourselves. It is not acting automatically, but acting reflectively. Why am I doing this? What makes my heart feel this way? Centering on the heart is a factor of deep curiosity as a spiritual practice is engaging fully with another person. When you are curious about the state of another person, about their mind, their heart, their answers to big questions, you become closer. One 2004 study found that high levels of this engaging curiosity in each other's lives predicted how close participants felt to one another. This shared trait was even stronger than optimism. While you can argue that it is biological, that there is an evolutionary advantage to wanting to know what makes a person tick, maybe they know where the best fruits are in the forest, this aspect of humanity is spiritual. Life is a pilgrimage, and by knowing the hearts and minds, the spirits of our fellow pilgrims, makes each step we take a step closer to building heaven on earth. Curiosity, deep curiosity, is the antidote to fear. It says to us what lies beyond these palace walls. What is beyond this garden? What is outside these boxes? Deep curiosity, by its nature, requires courage because it knows what is out there is uncomfortable. It may be just an inch, or it may be a well of suffering. It understands this and accepts it as a part of the process of learning and being in the world. And it is oftentimes that with our fellow pilgrims, with each other, that we feel this discomfort. Getting comfortable with the uncomfortable is necessary to living a spiritual life. It is necessary to living a life less boring as well. I want to take you back, or if you haven't experienced this yet, take you forward to a first date. There are, of course, the jitters, the fussing with hair, the fret of the right outfit, the smelling of the breath, and maybe the armpits. Then there is the arrival at the restaurant. Is the other person late? Oh, are you being stood up? Oh, wait, there they are. And oh my God, they are attractive. How to impress them? There is an awkward conversation back and forth, trying to get into each other's flow. There may be trembling of hands or lips. Anyone that has been in a long-term relationship can tell you that this uncomfortableness doesn't go away. It doesn't mean the jitters, but that the relationship are living organisms unto themselves together. Whether you have been together for 2 months or 50 years, we all have highs and lows. That your curiosity will still exist with each other, that you will discover new things that annoy the other person, and that just like you, people change. Deep curiosity is engaging with this change as a feature of life. We all have swallowed the apple of knowledge, but we can choose to accept the world around us by just humming through life, or we can choose to actively live life with the knowledge we have. To live a spiritual life is to live an awakened life, to live an engaged life, to live a courageous life. It is to sit with what scares us most and accept it. Siddhartha's life as Buddha is an example of this deep curiosity. On the night of his enlightenment, Buddha sat underneath the Bodhi tree in deep contemplation. Around him, illusions tried to break his meditation. Erotic images of war, fire, disease. But Buddha did not break his concentration for them. He remained still, he remained quiet, and he went deeper. Buddha under the tree that night was swayed and dismissed on his quest for knowledge. He had the unrelenting thirst to reach nirvana. His curiosity was laser focused on his goal, and he did not let other curiosities distract him from his purpose. He was living fully in that moment. In our faith, Let's go deep. In our lives, let's go deep. Let us be blessings to one another. Blessed be. Please rise as you are able in body or spirit and join us in singing hymn number 301, Touch the Earth and Reach the Sky.